everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin, and this is Maltin on Movies with Baron Vaughn. And who are you?
I'm Baron Vaughn.
And remember we're that, sitting here together.
Remember that bit, guys, where we would say what Maltin just said? I just called you Maltin. As if it was a seventh grade PE class.
Okay, Vaughn.
Maltin. Right. Maltin? See, there you go. We're good because we're going to talk about Art Carney later. But... yes, Maltin on Movies. It's good to be back.
It's nice to be back with you.
It's very good to see you, Leonard. It's good to see you.
Ditto. Ditto indeed. And we're very happy to be working together again as we continue to do and look forward to doing. And today we got a fun show. We got an interesting show I think you will enjoy because we're talking about funny ladies.
Funny ladies. You know, there's always... Every 5 years, people are just like, women are funny again. It's like they've always been funny.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a news flash.
It's not news. Like, even when we thought of this, Leonard, off the top of his head, sent me 20 suggestions. Oh, there's no funny women. Ah, here's 20 people I just thought off the top of my head. So that's how easy it is to find
well,
the funny
Well, I was putting mind for, of it from after seeing Spy with
yes,
Melissa McCarthy.
Which
a
I loved,
very funny
which
movie.
I love.
Really good movie.
Yeah.
I think maybe her best movie, actually.
Oh, really? Okay.
I might go so far as to say that, and I just did.
I'll agree with you on that one.
And I was really, really impressed with Trainwreck.
Which I haven't seen yet.
I haven't seen a lot of Amy Schumer. She's a little raw for my taste, normally. But she collaborated with Judd Apatow on this movie.
Who, I'm surprised, is not more raw for your taste.
He's pushed my envelope.
I hear he tempers her rawness with just a little conservatism.
I think, no, I wouldn't say conservatism. I would say focus.
All right. When I see it, I'll know.
You may call that a euphemism, but
okay.
I think they worked well together. I think they collaborated fruitfully together.
Okay.
And that's what made this such a good movie. And I don't think it diluted her at all, diluted her humor.
Okay.
I mean, it's still very raw, and it's still not your mother's... romantic comedy.
It's not your mother's rom-com.
But it's awfully good. Anyway, so here we are with two...
Not a mom rom-com.
Yeah, two major female star comedy vehicles in
right.
a row. So it seemed appropriate to look back a little bit at the last generation of female stars, female comedy stars,
box office stars, women who could headline a movie, and you said, "Oh, that person's in it. I'll see it."
Exactly, and where they, you know, what happened? Why did they all disappear?
Many theories.
I know. I mean, we all, well, of a certain age, you'll remember that there's always seemed to be a new Diane Keaton movie, a new Bette Midler movie, Goldie Hawn, Whoopi Goldberg, others too. And they built films around these women, around their personalities, around their strengths. And it wasn't just women going to see them. These were popular movies, and many of them very good movies, too.
Yes, yes.
And
funny.
And funny. Funny. Funny in a way that we don't see too much of anymore.
Very true.
Funny because most of those movies, most of those vehicles were... Well-constructed stories. They had good premises.
Great writing and
yeah.
great direction. And then you get a charismatic female star.
Yep.
And then, boom, you got a good movie.
Yep. Like the first one we're going to discuss today. Now this is our so-called good movie
yes.
for the day. We'll have a turkey and we'll have a sleeper. The good movie for today is one that, well, probably, if not all of you, many of you have seen. I've seen it too, but I hadn't seen it since it was new in 1992.
It's been maybe 10 years since I last saw it.
And I so enjoyed revisiting it last night. My wife and I just had a great time watching Sister Act.
Yeah.
What a good movie.
Great movie.
This is a movie that defines the term crowd pleaser.
Very true.
This is a crowd pleasing movie. And everything just clicks.
And you know, look, I it's a classic. I think, especially to my generation, where it's just sort of like, I was maybe 12 when this movie came out,
mm-hmm.
and I loved it. It's a good movie. You can watch with your mom. Like, and
yeah.
everyone, there's something for everybody in it. Whoopi Goldberg is so charismatic.
Oh, she
holds us all
form.
In the palm of her
she's
hand.
She's in peak form.
Yes, exactly. And she's a black woman named Whoopi Goldberg. But that's what I love about her. But, you know, like... It's easy to condescend and to get jaded and say like, oh, this movie's so this and that, so that. But like, look, can you make it? No. It's just a well-made movie that's funny, that has heart.
Yep.
Heart up the waz.
Yep.
Up the waz. And it's about joy, and it's right. a joyous film.
Is it a completely credible movie? No, it's a movie. It's a comedy. It exaggerates life, exaggerates reality. But it does so in a funny, clever way, an right. enjoyable way.
And the performances are great as
yes.
well.
It's well very well cast.
Very well cast. And everyone plays it for truth. Like
yeah,
they don't
yeah.
– there's no winking in this movie.
Yeah, yeah. Now, one thing that did occur to me as I was watching it last night was that it borrows a template, or at least part of a template, mm-hmm. if there's such a thing, from one of the all-time great comedies, Some Like It Hot.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, I heard or read Billy Wilder, the director and co-writer of that movie, talking about an incident. He was about to make the film with Jack Lemmon and Tony Curtis, and he ran into the great veteran movie producer David O. Selznick, the man who made Gone with the Wind and other big movies. And they were chatting, and Selznick said, "What are you up to, Billy? What are you working on?" And he told him the premise of Some Like It Hot, that these two musicians in 1920s Chicago accidentally witnessed the St. Valentine's Day massacre in a garage where a bunch of gangsters are machine gunned down. And because they're spotted and they're eyewitnesses, they have to take it on the lam and get out and disguise themselves. And so they disguise themselves as women and join an all-girl orchestra. And Selznick said to Wilder, "You're going to show the murders at the beginning of a comedy?" And Wilder said, "Yeah, of course I am." He said, "You can't do that. It's a comedy. You're going to turn people off. They'll be repulsed. They'll be disgusted. You can't show a real murder of multiple people." And Billy Wilder said, "No, you don't understand. If the audience doesn't believe that these guys are in desperate straits, that their lives are at stake, and that's why they have to go to this extreme,
it won't work.
It won't work." And that's exactly what they do here in Sister Act.
Absolutely.
In a very similar way. Whoopi, not giving it anything away, it's the very beginning of the movie, Whoopi also witnesses a murder from some tough people in Reno.
Harvey Keitel.
Yep.
In Harvey Keitel uniform.
Yes.
He put on his Harvey Keitel suit and he's like, "I'm just going to Harvey Keitel it today."
Right.
That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do what Harvey Keitel does.
So she comes under the protection of a police detective, Bill Nunn.
Great Bill Nunn. Yes.
Right. And he impresses upon her the fact that she's got to hide out. He convinces her, not easy, but he convinces her that she's got to testify and that she has to be in protective custody, hidden away from everybody until she's going to testify. Really hidden away. Where can you hide Whoopi Goldberg? She has hair out to here.
Mm-hmm.
She plays a
Reno lounge singer.
Yes.
There's a little bit of a parable at the beginning of the movie as well, where she's in Catholic school as a young girl.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that she is not into it. She's into being the center of attention and not all of the kind of like the quiet subservience of a Catholic that this nun who's her teacher's trying to impress upon her. Cut to her as a lounge singer. We get to the murder, then suddenly, boom, she's got to be back in a freaking church.
It's a great idea and it's well done. And of course, again, sometimes inspiration strikes. And I don't know who was responsible for this. Producer, director, Whoopi herself. Who is the mother superior? Who's going to play the mother superior at this convent, this rather impoverished San Francisco convent, that's going to agree to take this woman in and hide her? And she is, as the mother superior says, the most conspicuous possible person
yes.
to try to hide. The only black person on the premises, for one thing, and a very flamboyant, outspoken woman as well, not demure.
Black people in the church, but not in the nunnery.
Right.
Get thee to one.
So who should play the mother superior who becomes sort of her...
foil?
Yeah. Foil and somewhat adversary.
Yeah.
Maggie Smith.
First time I'd ever seen her. First exposure.
I'm sure a lot of people
saw
her for the first time in this. One of the great, actresses of our time, but one of the great comedy actresses of our time.
She's
this
so
woman,
funny.
What she can do with a line is nobody's business. She's still doing it on Downton Abbey. She's still doing it anywhere and everywhere.
She did all the Harry Potter movies.
She's fantastic. I got to see her once on Broadway.
Oh,
what a treat that was.
Nice.
What a treat that was. Anyway, so you got Maggie Smith. You got Harvey Keitel. And then you have, in the supporting cast, Kathy Najimy. Now,
yeah.
we'd never seen her in 1992. She's been working, I'm sure. But this film made her an overnight sensation as she plays a nun who is just bubbling over.
Right.
With good cheer and effervescence.
Filled with sunshine, I think she describes herself.
She's hilarious. Very, very funny.
And she's somebody who had been steadily working on her comedy. She mm-hmm. had a comedy partner, Mo Gaffney.
Right.
And Kathy and Mo for years were building a reputation in New York and Los Angeles, and then more Los Angeles than New York. And then she landed in this movie and was hilarious.
Yeah. And has been doing good work ever since. And then toward the end of her career, a wonderful character actress named Mary Wicks, kind of a hatchet-faced character actress, who first came to prominence in the movie version of The Man Who Came to Dinner, famous play.
Okay.
Where she plays Sheridan Whiteside's long-suffering nurse, which he reprised on television years later. Just another one of those actresses, not unlike Maggie Smith, who can just sell a line with her delivery, with her look, with her voice.
This is the woman, if you're trying to figure out who she is, she was the person that was running the choir.
Yes.
Before Whoopi Goldberg's character comes in there and livens it up.
And she lands every line they give her lands on the target.
That accent, that voice that she has.
And she had a few more films in her after this. She's in Postcards from the Edge. She's very good in that. And she plays Aunt March in the 1994 version of Little Women, which is a wonderful rendition of Little Women. And she died in 1995. A long and wonderful career, Mary Wicks. And a newcomer named Wendy McKenna, who's very good as the sort of the young, earnest.
Yeah, the mousy nun that ends up having a voice of gold.
Yep. So a great ensemble. A great ensemble, good location work, gives it flavor.
Yeah, yeah. Great set pieces, they would say.
And it's directed by a man. I get sad every time I say his name because his name is Emil Ardolino, and he died too young. He died at the age of 50. He had made a number of very well-regarded dance documentaries for PBS, great performances and such, one on Baryshnikov, things like that. And I think it was that got him his first feature film directing job, which was Dirty Dancing.
Yeah.
He directed Dirty Dancing. And that was such a hit that he just
kept
on making movies. He made Chances Are, a nice romantic comedy with Robert Downey Jr., Sybil Shepherd, Three Men and a Little Lady, the sequel to Three Men and the Baby. He made a version of The Nutcracker. And the last thing he did before he passed away was the TV version of Gypsy with Bette Midler. So Emil Ardolino, good director, who obviously knew how to make the most of this material. And it's written by, it's credited to Joseph Howard. It says, written by Joseph Howard.
Okay.
There is no such person. Joseph
Fake
Howard
person.
Does not exist. It's the pseudonym was chosen by Paul Rudnick, one of the funniest writers alive. If you happen to read the New Yorker magazine, he contributes every month or two a side-splittingly funny essay there. And for years for Premier Magazine, he wrote another gut-bustingly funny series of essays as supposed film pundit Libby Waxman-Gellner. He's basically a playwright. He had a hit play years ago called Jeffrey, and then won awards and acclaim for that. He's written a handful of movies, Addams Family, Values, In and Out, Isn't She Great? I don't know that he's ever had
a hit,
a really great, great, great vehicle. But even in his work, like he wrote the Stepford Wives remake, which we
talked
covered
about
recently. And it's not a good movie, but there's some hilarious lines in it.
Yeah.
Because he thinks funny. He's just got a funny brain. He took his name off the movie because apparently after he finished it, it went through many, many rewrites. And by the time they had a finished shooting script, he felt it wasn't his anymore.
Right.
He didn't want to take credit for it.
And you said that they had originally written it for
He'd written it for Bette Midler.
Midler.
That's what I read.
Which is interesting to know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you know, who would have been fine too?
Yeah.
I mean, when you think back of that era, of those women that we've been talking about, at a certain point, they were so reliably successful in these comedies that they started teaming them up. Bette and Lee Tomlin in Big Business. Bette and Goldie Hawn and Diane Keaton together in the First Wives Club.
Right. Put them all in one place.
Yeah, exactly.
That'll be three times as
funny.
Got
one, get more than one. Anyhow, Sister Act was a big hit, and understandably so. As I say, a crowd pleaser with a capital C. So they rushed a sequel into production, and a year later, Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit, was in theaters, reuniting Whoopi Goldberg, Maggie Smith, Kathy Najimy, Mary Wicks, Wendy McKenna. Whoopi, I don't want to get into background gossip and stuff. Apparently, it was public at the time. She was not happy with the way she was being treated by the Disney company, which produced the movie. She felt she was being underpaid.
Oh, I didn't know that. That does make perfect sense.
Made quite the protest, got quite a raise to do the sequel.
Oh, good.
And also got them to finance her pet project, Sarafina.
Oh, the apartheid interesting. Movie. Yeah.
That was kind of the bargain.
That was a piece of the Sister Act 2 package.
Yep.
Wow. It looks like Whoopi got back in her habit.
Yeah. She did well out of that.
Yeah. That's a power play. Smart.
So let's pause for a minute and talk about the nature of this funny lady, Whoopi
Goldberg, yeah.
As opposed to, say, Amy Schumer and
Melissa McCarthy.
Melissa McCarthy, who both come out of stand-up and improv.
Yeah,
those worlds.
Yeah. Melissa more improv and sketch. And
she
Amy
was in
more,
The Groundlings.
Yeah, Amy more stand-up. LA, yeah. Whoopi Goldberg was a solo performer. And you would more classify her as a performance artist than a stand-up comic. But her performance art was very jokey. It was because she was very influenced by Richard Pryor, and she was very influenced by a lot of the stand-up comics that were in New York at the time that she was building her shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I – fortunately, there was a 25-year anniversary of Whoopi Goldberg on Broadway,
mm-hmm.
and I got to go. I went to go see her do these classic characters. She did basically a massive rewrite of all the characters that made her famous,
mm-hmm.
and she actually did make TV specials as well as these solo shows and whatnot. And they're very, very funny and very incisive, and she's clearly a great improviser. And there's not a lot of people who get to the level where the Oscars want you to host it.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and she's an EGOTer, as a lot of you know.
Yeah, she is.
She's got that EGOT.
Which is to say, she has won an Emmy,
a Grammy,
an Oscar,
and
a
Tony
Award.
Right.
Now, the Tony Award, asterisk here, was for a producing gig. She was one of the producers of Thoroughly Modern Millie.
Uh-huh.
So it's not a performing Tony.
Oh, I didn't know
that's
that.
That's the asterisk, the fine print. Nevertheless, she's got a Tony.
Yeah.
And of course, that one-woman Broadway show, which was directed by Mike Nichols.
Yes.
Mike Nichols saw the rough or the raw version of her show, thought so much of her that he said, we have to bring this to Broadway and I want to direct it. And he helped her shape it. I mean, it's her show and her material.
Right, but she was doing it like off Broadway.
Right. He brought it to Broadway and I'm sure lent a hand in the, you know,
construction
and staging
and the vision of it. Yeah.
And it was a smash and it did make her an overnight star. It was recorded for HBO, fortunately. So it exists as it did on Broadway. And it was from seeing that Steven Spielberg cast her in The Color Purple in a decidedly non-comedic role.
A very dramatic role, yes, that she nailed.
That she nailed.
That she just was incredible.
And
about a debut.
And earned her an Oscar nomination.
Right.
And then 5 years later, she won the Academy Award for her memorable performance in Ghost. And since then, I mean, there's nothing she hasn't done in show business. There's nothing she hasn't done. And done well. I mean, not every film has been a hit. Not every attempt has been successful. But she's tried a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
She is a good actress.
She's reliable. And when it comes down to it, she can actually act as well. And that's why people kept coming back. They're just like, I got to see this sister act.
Yep.
Come on, guys. I bring it around. Maltin style.
She's really good. And then this past year, she did something I really enjoyed. She did for cable. She directed and produced a documentary about Moms Mabley.
Oh, it was beautiful.
That was really interesting.
Really great. If you guys haven't seen that, check it out. If you got HBO Now, you can check it out. Google it. Find it. It's great.
Yeah. I once worked with Moms Mabley.
Did you really?
I was on the Mike Douglas Show.
Whoa.
One day. When it was still in Philadelphia, I was plugging a book, and I got that was a great booking to get on a national show like Mike.
Yeah.
I was really young; I was like 20 or 21 years old, and I'm sitting backstage, and I got to witness Jackie Moms Mabley taking her teeth out to go on stage.
Wow,
that's something you don't forget.
Yeah, I bet that's a commitment to that character.
That stays with you.
Wow. Okay.
And I was plugging my book on the great movie Shorts, the old short subjects.
Oh, yeah.
And Mom said, "I always liked a man in shorts." That's a poor imitation, but that's what she said.
That was my favorite part about it. It was how bad it was. But my favorite, but it's in you. It's ingrained in your heart forever.
Well, it'll never leave.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a good show. Anyway, hats off to Whoopi.
Yes.
And there's so many good films. I like Karina, mm-hmm. Boys on the Side. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of good movies in
and her Ghost. Ghost is great, and she's great in it. And A Color Purple, of course. I mean, Whoopi Goldberg.
But if it's been a while since you've seen Sister Act, and you got an evening at home, and you just want to relax and
see a crowd pleasing movie,
have fun, share it with your friends or family. You can't go wrong.
And you might get a little emotional. And it might surprise you.
Yeah.
Especially if you're 34 and Baron Vaughn. And you're like, oh, this is not what I remember it being. This has got more heart. Man, I need to talk to my therapist about it. Sister Act, do it.
Well, next up, we're going to discuss another very talented woman.
A very, very funny. One of my favorite comics of all time.
And one of the most popular women on the planet. But she made this movie.
One of the worst.
Yeah, that just didn't quite pan out. If you haven't guessed what it is, you won't have long to guess. We'll tell you in just a minute.
Yippee-ki-yay! All right. Welcome back, everybody, to Maltin' on Movies with Baron Vaughn. That was a little taste of the Hey Dude theme song. That's for my 30-somethings. Anyway, Maltin, how you doing?
I'm all right.
All right.
I'm doing all right. I'm happy to be here back at the microphone with you.
Well, you know, Leonard, if loving you means being right, I don't want to be Mr. Wrong.
Oh, yes, you just dropped the title. You just dropped that name.
Mr. Wrong.
I remember being in a movie theater here in L.A., the one up at City Walk.
Yeah.
It used to be called the Cineplex Odeon. Now it's an AMC theater. An enormous lobby. And when they built it, it was so huge that they could accommodate all those big standees, multidimensional cardboard standees.
Why do people like those? What do they think is going to happen? Like, they made a whole room out of cardboard.
Yeah, I know.
Now I'm going to see that movie.
I know. Well, it's a relatively inexpensive form of advertising. You know,
when
you have to grab people's attention. So there's this big, big standee for an upcoming movie called Mr. Wrong, which depicted Ellen DeGeneres being dipped like in a dance at a wedding. Being dipped by Bill Pullman.
Isn't she wearing like a
bridal veil?
A veil, yeah.
And she's looking out at us in horror.
Yeah.
And I looked at this standee and I said, really?
Yeah.
And I said, really, not because I don't like Ellen DeGeneres. I do. She was already doing that hit situation comedy.
A giant sitcom called Ellen. You all remember it.
And obviously on hiatus from the schedule of doing that show. She was persuaded or invited to star in a movie. Very first starring vehicle.
And it makes sense because, look, this is what happens. Like a giant sitcom star, you know, who obviously there are millions of people that are watching this woman's show. Maybe millions of people will watch this movie we make if we put her in it,
mm-hmm.
is the way that they thought of it.
Exactly.
But they didn't think about how the movie should be a good one. That's what they didn't
think about. They left out. They forgot that part. This Friends is a bad movie. We can't simply put. Yeah, we can't put any dressing on this one. It's hard to doll this one up at all, and it's not Ellen's fault. She gives it her best shot.
She does.
So
she tries to go for it.
Yeah,
and Ellen Cleghorn as well, who's also in the movie.
Oh yeah,
double the Ellens.
Some other good people in this movie too, but it's just we're going to keep saying this. I'm afraid there's no way to get it wrong. It's just a wrong-headed movie.
Take the Mister off. That's what the movie is. It's misguided. It's not The direction's a mess. Even in the beginning of it, it opens at a wedding. And actually, no, it doesn't open at a wedding. It opens in some sort of weird catacomb. We just see these feet.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a flashback. Yeah, she's in prison.
We see these feet walking, and we hear people talking I don't even know if it was Spanish or Spanish accents. And they're saying, oh, it's a white woman. Oh, yeah, it's a gringa. And then they come into this room, and then we see this woman head down on the table. We don't know who it is. She's in a wedding dress, clearly. And then these two men who I assume are officers of the law in Mexico are like, tell us what happened. And she looks up, and it's Ellen DeGeneres. And she's like, all I know is I was single and I was 31. Flashback to her at a wedding. Her little sister, played by the great Hope Davis,
yep,
has just been married. But also the sound is off. Like, everyone's speaking in this way. You hear it and you go like, oh, they recorded these lines later. It's not matching. It sounds distant and weird and strange, yeah, and ethereal for no reason.
Anyway, she plays a career woman and works for a morning TV show in San Diego.
With an underutilized Robert Goulet.
Yes. obviously a very smart, capable woman who at the wedding, of course, is being pressured by her parents, by her relatives. Oh, you're next. Your turn will come. That kind of thing the single people are well aware of.
Yeah, being pressured by everyone you know to be in a relationship and get married.
Right, right. And it's the last thing she wants. And one night, she, out of loneliness and frustration, it's Valentine's night. Everything she channel surfs is a bitter reminder that she's alone.
Yeah.
So she walks down the street to a neighborhood bar and chances to meet Bill Pullman, who is very charming, a little mysterious, which adds to his intrigue. And they sit together, and they have some drinks, and they form a bond pretty quickly. Pretty quickly.
Yeah. The quickest bond that you could perform.
Yeah. And then, are you sitting down, folks? All right. He turns out to be the guy from hell.
Insane. Horrible person. And, of course, none of her friends believe her.
Right.
They think that she's making it up because she's doesn't want to be in a relationship. She's like, no, something's wrong with him. And it just gets worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, that's right.
But the movie gets worse and worse and worse,
right,
as well.
His mother is nuts, played by the great Joan Plowright. His ex, his supposed ex, played by the wonderful Joan Cusack.
Whoa, and what a weird role for her.
Yes.
She's out there. It's loony.
It's all unpleasant. This film is a trial to sit through, an ordeal to sit through. And none of it is because of Ellen.
You would prefer Joel Schumacher's Batman and Robin to this movie. That's how bad this movie is. Is that you're like, you know what? I got to watch Batman and Robin.
And I should add, to address the elephant in the room, I did not know at the time this movie came out that Ellen was gay. She had not come out yet. She was in the middle of her sitcom run, and this movie came out in 1996. She famously came out on her show the following year, 1997. And you have a theory about this.
I think they're related. I think that, look, I'm a straight man, but it's very hard to be in the closet. I have a lot of friends that are, you know, LGBT, all the other letters as well. So being in the closet is a very intense thing, especially when you're in Hollywood, because your people, your friends might know, your family knows, but then everyone that adores you does not know.
Yeah.
So there's always this feeling that you're pulling off this elaborate lie over everyone who's paying money to see you all the time.
Yeah.
And I wonder if she did this movie, which turned out horribly.
It was a flop.
It was a flop, but it's like a romantic comedy. I don't know why I said it like Bob Uecker. That's a romantic comedy in which she's playing a straight woman, and it was a disaster. And I bet she was like, you know what? I can't be this anymore. Like, she's like, look what happens when I just lie to everyone.
Yeah.
I make a horrible movie. I have to be who I am. That's it. It's 1997. Things have changed. Yes. And then she came out. Right. I bet they're related.
Right. And look what's happened to her since.
Yeah. And everyone loves her. She's Ellen.
Yeah, she's Ellen.
Come on.
We all love Ellen. And like Whoopi, now a former host of the Oscars, a successful host of the Oscars.
Exactly.
Among a zillion other credentials on her resume.
There are few women in the United States that if you say one name, you don't even have to say both names.
That's right.
You know who you're talking. Oprah, right. Whoopi, Ellen, yeah. Hillary. Okay? These women have done so much to be called by one name, right. And you recognize them.
P.S. She did redeem her movie resume.
With what?
In Finding Nemo.
What am I talking about? Of course, one of my favorite movies. She's great in that.
She is great as Dory.
It's because it's an animated film, and I was like,
she's just so funny and so wonderful and so endearing.
Yes.
As the short-term memory-plagued Dory. And as we speak, has been in production on a sequel called Finding Dory,
which
the folks at Pixar are preparing, which they say will be ready next year, 2016.
It better be.
And they have a lot to live up to, of course.
Yeah, the original
Finding
one
Nemo
is fantastic.
Being such a great movie.
Yeah.
And that character being so funny. But those guys at Pixar, they work hard to make it good.
Whew, they are working their butts off, and it's amazing.
So I wish them every success, and Ellen too.
Now, they could have been used. If they were around for Mr. Wrong, maybe things could have gone
right.
Oh,
yeah, they could have a whole slew of improvements, I can picture, including deciding to shut it down.
Yeah.
But that would have been an option.
Look, we both like Ellen. That's the point.
That's the point.
And so it's disappointing. Like, it's always interesting when a movie goes wrong.
Yeah.
And this movie goes horribly wrong.
Yeah. We're going to end on a high note. We're going to give you a sleeper. We're going to suggest a film that you might not know, might not have seen, or might not have seen in a long, long time with another very talented woman. And we'll tell you about that in just a minute. Welcome back. Welcome back. We are so glad you're there listening to us. We're happy to be here.
Yes, indeed.
Talking about funny ladies. And we're not going to discuss a funny lady that you have a recent and ongoing relationship with.
Well, I mean, I'm on a TV show. Some of you might know. It's called Grace and Frankie. And the person who plays Frankie is a woman named Lily Tomlin, who is one of my personal heroes. And when I was cast on that show, I honestly was like, I'm going to be playing Lily Tomlin's son? That's crazy to me. But she has had a long, illustrious, brilliant career. Everyone loves Lily Tomlin. Even when it's a bad movie, you're like, well, I mean, Lily Tomlin was in it. Yeah. But she makes really good choices. Like, it's,
she does.
Her stinkers are pretty minimal. And this is a movie I was unfamiliar with, actually, that Leonard recommended. It's called The Late Show.
Late Show from 1977. Written and directed by one of my favorite American filmmakers, Robert Benton.
Now, I'd never heard of this guy before. I know that Robert Altman produced this movie.
Right. Robert Benton is kind of underappreciated, I think. And he
seems it. I really enjoyed this.
Well, he started, oddly, an unusual start for a filmmaking career. He was an art director at Esquire magazine.
Oh, interesting.
But it gave him a visual sense, certainly. Yeah. But he's a lifelong film
buff?
Aficionado.
Okay.
Film buff of the first order. And he worked with a writing partner, David Newman. Benton and Newman wrote Bonnie and Clyde, the original Superman with Christopher Reeve.
Oh.
What's Up, Doc, for Peter Bogdanovich.
Okay.
And then they went their separate ways. They had gotten an Oscar for Bonnie and Clyde. Benton later won Oscars for writing, and he also directed Kramer versus Kramer.
Oh, my goodness.
And wrote and directed Places in the Heart with Sally Field, John Malkovich.
Just he's in this era that I didn't see a lot of those things. I mean, obviously I saw Superman.
One of my favorite films of his is from the 90s called Nobody's Fool with Paul Newman. Wonderful movie.
Okay.
And he directed another film that I think is underrated called The Human Stain with Anthony Hopkins and Harry Lennox.
Oh, yes. We talked about
Nicole
this
Kidman.
Movie.
Yeah. A very talented man. And he wrote this script and brought it to Robert Altman. Who in the 70s was, you know,
The guy.
And Altman had just a few years ago directed a remake of Raymond Chandler's The Long Goodbye
with
Elliot Gould.
With Elliot Gould. And it was a mystery. It's a noir story.
Yeah.
And this is a noir story.
Yes, this,
so
is, a, this
perfect,
is a kind of a
perfect match.
A kind of a knowing homage to the Gumshoe, to the era of the Gumshoe in L.A.
Right.
Starring Art Carney, the great Art Carney. As a guy who's getting old, past his prime, to put it mildly, but still at it.
Right. And there's that sense, and, you know, he's from the 40s. He talks a lot about the 40s.
Right.
And, you know, people condescend to him because of his age. And it's the 70s now. It's a different time, different priorities.
But
he's still relevant.
But he's old school in a good way because he's got experience and common sense on his side. And that makes up for whatever, you know, frailty and whatever problems he may have as account of age. And he winds up in cahoots with a somewhat flaky client.
Kooky.
In her kooky hippie period, Lily Tomlin. And the thing about Lily is every film she made during this stretch, and she came into her own in the early 70s.
Right.
On Laugh-In.
Which was a show I watched all the time.
Of course.
I mean, I was not alive when it was on, but I watched it later.
Yeah.
On Nick at Night. Continue.
And she never repeated herself. It seems as if every role or every film or every project, I mean, she repeated her characters, the ones that she made famous on Laugh-In, like Ernestine, the switchboard operator, and Edith Ann.
Ethan.
You know, little girl, precocious little girl, and Tommy Valour and many, many others. Those are ongoing characters. But in movies, in the movie world, she did a little of everything.
Yeah, she always because she was, again, another solo performer, like Whoopi Goldberg.
Again, I would say a performance artist.
A performance artist. Now, the difference to me is that Lily actually did work out her stuff in stand-up comedy rooms. Mm-hmm. She was very close with comedians, you know, specifically people like Richard Pryor and George Carlin were like her close friends. Mm-hmm. But she was such a good mimic. And such a good she could see what people were and just had that – everybody has a little thing about them that's slightly different, and that's what she always brings to all of her characters. Yeah. There's always just a slight thing that's different than anything she's ever done.
She's an observer.
Yeah.
She's a keen-eyed, keen-eared observer of humanity.
Yes.
Not unlike Whoopi. You know, they both have that gift. They both have that very special gift. And in fact, you know, her first – real movie appearance 2 years before this was in a totally serious dramatic performance in Robert Altman's Nashville, and she blew people away with that stunning performance that earned her an Oscar nomination. So like Whoopi, she started on a high note movie-wise.
Right. It's a hell of a debut.
And this is just 2 years later, The Late Show. And like Whoopi, she came to prominence first with a one-woman show on Broadway. And that first one won her a special Tony, I believe. And then she came back with her partner Jane Wagner's brilliant show called The Search for Intelligent Signs of Life in the Universe. And that too won a Tony and finally got filmed years later.
Yeah, a couple years later. And the film of that is very fascinating. There's no live audience, which I think undercuts the comedy in it. Mm-hmm. But I think it was made in the
91.
Yeah, 90s. And it's worth the watch, especially because you will see, if you have never seen, her influence on every single woman since her. Hmm. The way that she does characters, you see Tina Fey, you see Amy Poehler, you see Melissa McCarthy, you see Kristen Wiig, you see Tracy Ullman. Mm-hmm. You see all of these different people being like, whoa, like they saw Lily Tomlin and went, I can do that.
Yeah.
And they stood up. And she essentially helped invent, like, and I think, you know, of course, with people like Lucille Ball and Carol Burnett and just all these great female comedians who brought something different to the table. I think Lily brought this whole, the way that she did characters was unlike anyone before her.
So in this film, The Late Show, she and Art Carney are truly an odd couple.
Yes.
Thrown together by circumstance.
The movie starts and it's so noir.
Mm-hmm.
The Warner Brothers emblem comes up and there's already this smooth
black and
piano
white.
Going down, and it's a long shot of a hallway that it comes around to a door, and behind that door is Art Carney.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a knock at his door. The woman opens it, who I guess he's renting a room in this woman's house. Mm-hmm. And his longtime associate, another detective, is there, standing there. She's like, you have a visitor. And he's standing there and he says something snide or hilarious. And then his friend opens his mouth and blood comes out. That's how the movie starts.
Yeah, starts with his partner dying.
Yes.
Partner played by the wonderful Howard Duff.
He Duff died so well. Horrible.
So there's an echo of the Maltese Falcon right there. And it goes on from there. And Bill Macy, at his smarmiest character around town, a Hollywood character and a lowlife, brings in Lily Tomlin because there's some connection with the partner's death.
Seemingly, it's just that, you know, she there's a funeral for his partner, mm-hmm. and then Bill Macy brings Lily Tomlin's character there, and she has – her cat's been kidnapped. And so she wants to employ him to find the cat. And he's like, what the hell is going on here? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
But of course, it's deeper than that.
Yeah. It's a very quirky, low-key movie. Don't expect fireworks here. But it's a film – it's a mood piece, really.
Yes.
It's a mood piece and a performance piece. And the performers who really light it up are Art Carney at his best – and of course, if you only remember Art Carney as Ed Norton on The Honeymoon, there's no reason not to, because it's one of the great comedic characters of all time. But he
basically invented the genre of sitcoms.
Yeah, but he was having a good decade. He had just won an Oscar in 1974 for Harry and Tonto, wonderful film by Paul Mazursky. He would go on to be in Movie, a very funny film by Stanley Donen, and a terrific movie called Going in Style, 1979. In which he and George Burns and Lee Strasberg play three senior citizens who get so bored with their lives that they decide to become bank robbers.
Never heard of that. Now I'm going to hear of it.
Awfully good movie. Maybe we'll cover it here one time.
I would like to.
But anyway, Art Carney's in great form here, just great. And he couldn't be more different from Lily Tomlin's character. She is of another generation. She's of another mindset. She's, you know, flaky and totally driven by the whims of her emotion at the moment.
Right. There's a great line where she's describing him to him, like why they would be good partners. But she also brings up the different problems they have. She's like, and I'll be honest, you're a slob. You're a slob. But I'm a Virgo. So it's just like, okay, that's the kind of dynamic there's going on here.
Yeah. And it's fun seeing her play this kind of character at this point in time. Mm-hmm. It was a period piece then, and now it's a double period piece.
Yeah.
Because it's taking us back to the late 70s and a different style, a different kind of movie making than we see today. Today, you'd call this an indie movie. This was a studio movie. Today, it would be an indie movie.
Yeah, because it's very small. It's a quiet movie that leans on the performances more than anything else.
Yes. And it's fun to watch her because she's doing something we don't
normally see her do. Now, the movie is not a comedy per se.
No.
But when we're looking specifically at Lily Tomlin's performance, she's hilariously funny in it.
Yep.
There are so many movies that we could have picked, but I think this is a great movie, especially as a sleeper.
Yes.
That in which she stands out that not a lot of people know.
We didn't want to mention, I mean, 9 to 5 would be an obvious
choice. It's a classic.
Plus
Jane Fonda's in it.
Because Jane Fonda and Lily, who are now starring in Grace and Frankie, first worked together in that movie.
And that's a classic.
Funny movie from 1980. And she's, you know, she's so good with Steve Martin in All of Me, mm-hmm. although he has the flashier role in that movie.
Right.
And he's fantastic in it. She did work with Bette Midler in Big Business. And she's done character parts mostly ever since. And she even played Granny in the Beverly Hillbillies movie, for crying out loud, in the 90s. And she's in a new movie, which I'm dying to see.
Called Grandma,
which opens in August, which has been playing the film festival circuit. Paul Weitz wrote and directed this one. And she's been getting great, great reviews and heaps of praise coming down her way. And so I'm chomping at the bit, let's say.
As am I. Long career. And also she's had an interesting relationship with David O. Russell.
yes, indeed. Well, no time to go into that.
Right. Flirting with Disaster and I Heart Huckabees and a very famous video that I've not seen, mm-hmm. but she's great in it. She's great in both of those movies. Yeah.
Anyhow, three terrifically talented women, Whoopi Goldberg, Lily Tomlin, and Ellen DeGeneres. And the fact that Ellen's attempt at doing a conventional and substandard romantic comedy didn't pan out is no discredit to her.
Is no reflection on who she is and how funny and brilliant she is.
That's right. We love her. So there you are. That's today's lineup. hope you got some tips, some useful tips, some useful reminders. That's what we like to do. And Baron, you're shooting season two of Grace and Frankie right now.
Shooting season two of Grace and Frankie, but you could also find me on the Twitters, BARVONBLAQ. I'm going to be going on a little bit of a stand-up comedy tour, which as I put it together and get the dates all solidified, I'll be talking more about that.
Good.
And
good,
Leonard,
good, good.
Where can people find you?
You can find me at Leonard Maltin on Twitter. And I am, after a little hiatus for health reasons, I'm not only back on the podcast, but I'm doing more and more blogging at my website, leonardmaltin.com, reviewing new movies, reviewing classics on DVD, reviewing film books, talking about this and that. And we'll be back with more movies for you next time. Thanks so much for tuning in. Tell your friends. We need more friends.
True. Tell your enemies as well. Maybe they'll become your friends.
That's right. We don't discriminate. We don't discriminate. We're looking for listeners.
Yes.
Of all stripes. Come one and all. Thanks, folks. See you next time.
This summer.
You sent her, you monster.
The world's greatest screenwriters.
So it appears it is to be a chess match, after all.
And Hollywood's brightest actors.
How do you just stop believing in it all?
Will come together.
Eventually, you will slip.
In a cinematic explosion.
I hope you trip and break your bloody stiff neck.
The likes of which podcasting has never seen.
Whew, end of the goddamn world, huh?
The Blacklist Table Reads takes the best screenplays from the famous Blacklist website and brings them to life with cream-of-the-crop talent and beautiful sound design. It's like a movie for your ears.
You have no idea how committed we are.
The story continues every week with a new movie every month. The Blacklist Table Reads, hosted by me, Franklin Leonard, and not in the movie trailer voice. Check it out on iTunes, at wolfpop.com, or on your favorite podcasting app. We'll see you there.
Wolf Pop is part of Midroll Media, executive produced by Adam Sachs, Matt Gourley, and Paul Scheer.